Good morning. How are y'all? I didn't want to get up this morning. All right. We are studying the life of Noah and hopefully Abraham, if I have the time. And our focus is going to be on the themes in the life of Noah and Abraham: righteousness, faith, and obedience, that they demonstrate in their relationship to the same God we serve. So last week, we started the account of the flood. We saw that it was in the form of an inversion. It's a big literary device. It's like a large chiasm where the points parallel each other as we progress to the center. And in the center, we find the big picture of our story. So we're going to pay special attention to the center. But this rising and receding of the flood story helps them imagine it better. It also helped them to memorize it better. So we've got the corruption of the land, which we covered last week, God's covenant with Noah, and God's provision for life. And this week we're going to pick up on entering the ark. We had a couple big pictures last week. I just wanted to go over with you real quick some things we noticed. We got insight into God's relationship with his people. He is obsessed with our hearts, our heart attitude, and how our heart aligns with his. God delivers those who walk with him. That's a theme that's picked up throughout Scripture. And righteousness is a relational concept that's defined by our actions of faith through our attitude of obedience. So that's review from last week. So let's pick up this week. And if y'all would pray with me as we start. Lord Jesus, I come to you this morning acknowledging that you are my Lord and my Savior and my Master. You deserve my utmost obedience and faith at all times. And I ask that you would put a guard over my lips, that everything that I say here this morning would be only what you want said. I give the charge back to you. You are in charge here this morning. I ask that you would open up your word to us, that you would make it fresh, that you would make it life-changing for us. I ask these things as a son who shares your inheritance. And I thank you for that. Amen. So we are in chapter 7, verses 1 through 9 of Genesis. And if y'all would read along with me. Then Yahweh said to Noah, "Enter the ark, you and all your household, for you alone I have seen to be righteous before me in this time. You shall take with you of every clean animal by sevens, a male and his female, and of the animals that are not clean too, a male and his female, also of the birds of the sky by sevens, male and female, to keep offspring alive on the face of all the earth. For after 7 more days I will send rain on the earth, 40 days and 40 nights, and I will blot out from the face of the land every living thing that I have made." Noah did according to all that Yahweh had commanded him. Now Noah was 600 years old when the flood of water came upon the earth. Then Noah and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives with him entered the ark because of the water of the flood. Of clean animals and animals that are not clean and birds and everything that creeps on the ground, there went into the ark to Noah by twos, male and female, as God had commanded Noah. I don't know about y'all, but as I read this story, especially as we get farther on, the timeline really started to confuse me, trying to figure out what exactly happened. Part of what threw me off was the repetition that Moses uses here. I had to figure out why exactly Moses kept repeating himself. So before we get into the timeline, notice with me a couple of things. Verse 2, how does Noah know what are the clean and unclean animals? That was one of my first questions. We don't have the Levitical laws yet. We don't have God laying out for Israel, this is what you are supposed to eat, this is what you're not supposed to eat, you're supposed to touch this, you're not supposed to touch this. And they don't have any laws for sacrifice yet because God hasn't given them those laws either. So the only reason I could come up with is this. God is setting a theme here for Israel through Moses that he's going to lay out more clearly in the time of the Exodus. So he hasn't put the formal clean and unclean eating emphasis on here yet. But notice that at the end of our story, and I know most of y'all are familiar with it, Noah does sacrifice some of each of the clean animals. So each of the animals that God singles out as special provision, sevens. They come in sevens. They're a provision for life through eating. They're a provision to nurture man on the ark, to provide for him clean animals in abundance to eat. And conversely, just as Abel sacrifices a perfect sacrifice in righteousness to God, so Noah, when he is saved from destruction, is going to offer up not the unclean animals, but some of each of the clean animals, which I think is him saying, God, you have provided for me while I've been on the ark, and now I'm offering you up of the first and the best as soon as I get out. So recognizes that God, when he provides, deserves the first and the best. 7 days early, God has Noah enter the ark. If you pay attention here, it says, enter the ark in verse 1, and then in verse 4 it says, for after 7 more days I will bring the flood. I never really noticed that before. Maybe it was my time in Sunday school. I remember those pictures of Noah shooing those last few animals into the ark as the clouds are coming and maybe the first few raindrops are starting to fall. That's how I always saw it, but I didn't see it this way. I didn't see Noah looking out into sunshine with everybody still going about their business and everything seeming just as it should be. He goes into the ark a week early. And if you're like me, and if Noah is anything like me, when I hear God tell me, enter the ark because you've got 7 days before the flood comes, I'm thinking, I don't want to go in the ark yet. I'm going to spend a lot of time in that ark, and I don't want to deal with the noise and the smells. I don't want to deal with feeding them yet. I want to spend a little bit that last few days I've got in the sunshine. I want to smell the fresh air for a little while longer. But no, again, Moses does everything just as God commands in verse 5. It says he does everything that Yahweh commanded him. I think there's a focus here on God's provision of safety and a place for life in the ark. This is the place that will shelter them. It's their cocoon of safety for them that will shelter them from the display of God's wrath that is going to be unleashed on the earth. And it's provisioned and it's prepared and it's perfect a week in advance. I think there's a parallel here for the week in advance mirroring God's week of creation. And God took 7 days to build the earth, a perfect environment for man. In the seventh, he rested. And then we have 7 days before God is going to end the earth as man knows it. So we're still in prevailing of the flood in 10 through 24 here. I started to pay attention to the order of events and it started to get fuzzy. So I sorted out all of these repeated things that Moses gives in this section. One of the commentaries I read called it epic repetition because he's telling an epic story. For me, at first, it was just epically confusing. So I made this list to kind of help me figure some of these things out. God is going to destroy the earth. He says it 4 times. And there's the references there. And then something that seems to parallel that, they're going to escape the destruction of the earth. So Noah and his companions enter the ark. And he says it 4 times. Again, that's a great way to help memorize it because you've got things bouncing back and forth to help you remember how the story goes. And then you've got something kind of like a chiasm in the middle. The coming of rain upon the earth is going to be part of the focus of that repetition. That happens 3 times. And then you've got rising of the waters of the earth, or they prevail on the earth, depending on your translation. And then decreasing of the flood of waters, or subsiding and receding. That started to give me a little bit more of an idea of what exactly is going on here. And as I thought more of how Moses is telling this story in terms of a chiasm, how things parallel each other, it made more and more sense. Moses isn't just trying to prolong the story to make it bigger for whatever reason. He's using repetition to build suspense. It's coming. You can feel it coming as the story progresses. And he also uses it to tie the story together. When I hear it, I will remember it easier because I've got these points to tie into along the way. It's very cultural, Middle Eastern cultural. It's very good storytelling. But all of that's not the really interesting stuff I learned. So here we go. This next order of events is part of what's very important to me. Noah and his family entered the ark in verse 7. Faith and obedience go hand in hand here. Noah and his family enter the ark a week early. And notice that they enter the ark for a reason. Verse 7, they entered the ark because of the water of the flood. Now, wait a minute. There is no water. There is no rain. There is no flood. But they have entered the ark because of the flood. It reminds me of some of my favorite stories by C.S. Lewis. In Prince Caspian, Truffle Hunter is waiting for rescue by the horn of Queen Susan. And he says, "I believe in the High King Peter as firmly as I believe in Aslan himself. The help will come. Have patience. The help will come." And I see Noah as kind of this same sort of character in our story. Truffle Hunter never wavered. He never gave up on the fact that they would be saved. And this is Noah. He's entered the ark a week early. It's shining outside. He looks crazy to the people around him. But the flood will come. Have patience, family. The flood is going to come. And the clean and unclean animals came to Noah. I always thought Noah had to kind of round them up a little bit. He had to shoo them into the ark. But God does the work here of getting the animals out of the world to save them for himself. So the animals come to Noah, but I think Noah still has quite a big job. He's got to sort them out in this three-decker ship, this palace, this floating palace he's made, and that's a big job. Verses 10 through 12. The author's going to give us all of the details we need. He pinpoints exactly when this happened. This is not a legend. This is not a fairy tale. It happened on the second month, which in the Jewish calendar is Iyar, or older generations called it Ziv. If you look back in the time of Solomon, it says he began to build the temple in the month of Ziv, the second month. For us in our calendars, that month lands between March and April. The Jewish calendar kind of, their months land right in between our months. So the flood happened on the 17th day of the month, so that puts it close to the beginning of our April. So it was on this day, the second month, the 17th day, that all of the fountains of the deep, they blow up. They just crash out of the deep. I've seen rain pretty heavy before. I've been in a rainforest. I've seen rain come down heavy. Even in Texas, we get some really heavy thunderstorms. I've had storms where I've had to pull over. It's coming down in sheets so thick. My fastest speed on my windshield wipers isn't enough. But Moses' words here are giving us an even more of an evocative idea. The fountains of the deep crash open with high pressure. High volumes of water are just bursting out of the deep. And then it says the floodgates of the heavens are opened. And if you've ever seen floodgates of a dam opened up, it's intense. It's huge. It's just enormous volumes of water coming down. The best I could put it in my imagination was I've stood under a waterfall before and I felt the heaviness of the water hitting me. I think that's more of an idea. But this beautiful, perfect world all of a sudden is crashing around you in volumes of water. You can't see. You can't hear. It's just a world of water around you all of a sudden. And then the rain falls for 40 days and 40 nights. So that's the picture in my head as I look at this torrent of water coming down. And then I ran into my problem. I couldn't figure out what exactly was happening, because it says in verses 7 and 10 that Noah and his family entered the ark, and 7 days later the flood came. And then it says, right after that, it says in verse 12, on that very same day, 12 and 13, on that very same day, Noah and Shem and Ham and Japheth entered the ark, but verse 12 says, the rain fell upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights, and that very same day, Noah and his family entered the ark. So it looked a lot to me like Moses said that Noah entered the ark 7 days before, and then he said Noah entered the ark, and then it flooded right that same day. So I had to go back and look at the repetition that Moses was using to figure out what's going on. So I think we've got two sections here in our story, in this section of what we've got. The first section is marked with Noah being 600 years old. That's how we know that Moses is starting a new section. Here it says, Moses was 600 years old. That's our section marker, and it ends in verse 10, with the flood coming after the promised 7 days. Then our second section is going to be a repeating section. That's going to give us more information along with the main point. So the second section begins in verses 11 and it ends in verse 17. And we've got to establish what our main point is to figure out what exactly Moses is going after here in this section. I'm going to read it to you to give you an idea of why I was confused. The rain fell upon the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. On the very same day, Noah and Shem and Ham and Japheth, the sons of Noah and Noah's wife and the three wives of his sons with them entered the ark, they and every beast after its kind and all the cattle after their kind, and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth after its kind and every bird after its kind, all sorts of birds. So they went into the ark to Noah by twos of all flesh in which was the breath of life. Those that entered, male and female of all flesh, entered as God had commanded, and the Lord closed it behind them. Then the flood came upon the earth for 40 days, and the water increased and lifted up the ark so that it rose above the earth. So that's why I was confused. Our main point in this section, I think, is going to be God keeps his promises. And how did I get that? Well, I found that in the two sections preceding these two sections. In 6, 13 through 22, we have God making a covenant, a promise to Noah that he will preserve Noah, his family, and some of every kind of animal. That is promise number one, section number one. In chapter 7, 1 through 5, God has promised that the rain will come in 7 days. So I think we're looking at two sections here and two sections here, and they're going to be joined in the middle where the bigger, if you want to call it the bigger, of the two promises is going to be our bookends, that God is going to preserve all life. So 6:13 through 22 corresponds to 7:6 through 10, and then 7:11 through 5 is going to correspond to the previous one. The smaller promise is going to be in the middle. Does that make sense? Y'all tracking with me? So the smaller promise of 7 days is going to resolve first, then the bigger promise that everything will be saved happens next. So to give you an idea of how I came to that conclusion, we're going to go back to our section that we're looking at again now that you know where I'm coming from. Different translations help me figure out what's going on here. It says in verse 13, on the very same day, in NASB and ESV, it says on the very same day, Noah and Shem and them and all of that. In verse 13 in NIV, it says on that very same day, Noah and his sons, etc. They entered the ark. So I think that we're going to have to take that from the NIV and insert it somewhere that will help me understand it better. So I think Moses' point is going to be made clear here in 7:13 through 16. And this is my version that I came up with. And the very same day that Noah and his sons and all the animals listed here entered the ark two by two, God closed the ark behind Noah. Then the flood came for 40 days. And when I shortened it down to that, I found out that the main point is not that it's the same day that they entered that the flood came. The main point is the same day that they entered, God sealed them into the ark. And then the flood came afterwards. This is the big promise being fulfilled. God took care of the detail of 7 days like he promised, and now the big promise is ending here. Noah enters, all the animals enter, and that very same day when everyone and everything that God had promised to keep safe and to protect, to preserve life, was shut and sealed in the ark. So they're not peering out of the door looking and saying, I wish I could be in the sunshine. They are closed in. Something else very interesting, if you'll look at this verse 16 with me. Those that entered, male and female of all flesh, entered as, this word is Elohim, had commanded him, Noah, and Yahweh closed it behind him. We've seen Yahweh before. Yahweh means I am with you. God commanded, Elohim commanded, but I am with you, sealed them in the ark, which leads me to believe that I am with you as with them on the ark at all times, because if he sealed it, he has to keep it closed. If he doesn't keep it closed, they have no way of keeping it closed themselves. So God is with them at all times on the ark, preserving their lives, keeping them safe, preserving them from his wrath and his destruction unleashed on sin. Now, isn't that exciting? Because we've seen this theme before, and God is still who he says he is. God has sealed them in the ark by himself. So they didn't spend a week looking out of the ark. God closed it. He kept his covenant promise to Noah from chapter 6. That makes more sense for why God uses Moses to spend so much time in these sections. I wondered why he repeated it so often, detailing exactly who and what was on the ark at all times. Everything and everyone. Birds, animals, all the kinds of the animals. Moses and all of his family, they're all safe, and they're all in there 7 days before judgment is coming. There's no rush. There's no last-minute planning. God doesn't have an incomplete control over what's going on. He knows exactly what's going on. He is in charge of the timeline. Noah may have made the ark. Noah may have provisioned the ark. But it is God who makes the timeline. It is God who does the preserving. It is God who does the sealing. He makes it the closed, safe, perfect environment to survive this world of water that's going to be coming on the earth. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful story. It's a great insight into God's relationship with his creation because he stays with them. Verses 17 through 24. After God keeps his big promise and his small promise, I think Noah's focus and Moses' focus in this story are that God has preserved life. So let's read 17 through 24. Then the flood came upon the earth for 40 days. And the water increased and lifted up the ark so that it rose above the earth. The water prevailed and increased greatly upon the earth. And the ark floated on the surface of the water. The water prevailed more and more upon the earth so that all the high mountains everywhere under the heavens were covered. The water prevailed 15 cubits higher. That's over 20 feet. And the mountains were covered. All flesh that moved on the earth perished, birds and cattle and beasts and every swarming thing that swarms upon the earth and all mankind, all that was on the dry land, all in whose nostrils was the breath of the spirit of life, died. Thus he blotted out every living thing that was upon the face of the land, from man to animals to creeping things and to birds of the sky, and they were blotted out from the earth, and only Noah was left together with those that were with him in the ark. The water prevailed upon the earth 150 days. We've gotten so many times, who is on the ark? Who is preserved? Who is alive? And Moses waits until the flood has risen and risen and risen again, even covering the tops of the mountains by more than 20 feet, before he lays out that everything died. And just to make sure we know everything died, he tells us four times. They're really gone. They're really, really gone. Really, really, really gone. But that's not the point, because yes, they are gone, but God has kept that promise, but he's kept the promise that what he has promised to keep alive is alive, just as God said, just exactly as God said. So we're now on the subsiding of the flood, and as you may have noticed, we're in the second half of our chiasm here. We're in the middle of the middle. So remember, we're supposed to be looking for our big picture, our main point of this story that Moses is going to drive home. I think we've got a really good clue from this last half that God keeps his covenant promises to Noah, both in 7 days and the promise of life. But let's look at the second half of this middle and see if we can finalize our summary of Moses' main point. We're going to see some major connections here that tie in creation with Noah and the people of the Exodus experience in the Exodus, with the experience in the garden, with Noah's experience on the ark. So let's read 8:1 through 14. But Elohim remembered Noah and all the beasts and all the cattle that were with him in the ark. And Elohim caused a wind to pass over the earth, and the water subsided. Also the mountains of the deep, the fountains of the deep and the floodgates of the sky were closed, and the rain from the sky was restrained, and the water receded steadily from the earth. And at the end of 150 days, the water decreased. In the seventh month, on the 17th day of the month, the ark rested upon the mountains of Ararat. The water decreased steadily until the 10th month. In the 10th month, on the first day of the month, the tops of the mountains became visible. Then it came about at the end of 40 days that Noah opened the window of the ark which he had made. And he sent out a raven, and it flew here and there until the water was dried up from the earth. Then he sent out a dove from him to see if the water was abated from the face of the land. But the dove found no resting place for the sole of her foot, so she returned to him into the ark, for the water was on the surface of the earth. Then he put out his hand and took her, and he brought her into the ark to himself. So he waited yet another 7 days, and again he sent out the dove from the ark. The dove came back to him toward evening, and behold, in her beak was a freshly picked olive leaf. So Noah knew that the water was abated from the earth. Then he waited another 7 days and sent out the dove, but she did not return to him again. Now it came about in the 601st year, in the first month, on the first day of the month, the water was dried up from the earth. Then Noah removed the covering of the ark and looked, and behold, the surface of the ground was dried up. In the second month, on the 27th day of the month, the earth was dry. That word for dry is bone dry. So let's back up a little bit. Our major connections. One, the earth is covered with water. It sounds a lot like the earth the way we've seen it before at the beginning of creation. The earth is covered with water. We have a new beginning. Our second connection, God remembers. This sounds a lot like Exodus 2:24. Right before God introduces himself to Israel as Yahweh, Moses writes in 2:24 that God heard their groaning and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and with Jacob. So our second connection with Exodus is God remembers his covenant. As an Israeli man, I'm starting to get excited. And God made a wind blow over the earth. We've seen that word before too. Ruach is the same word we saw in Genesis 1, where the Ruach of God was hovering over the surface of the waters. The wind of God, the breath of God. It's also the same root word we see in Exodus 14:21. And Yahweh drove back the sea by a strong east wind. Same root word is ruach. I'm starting to get very excited. God has driven back the flood by a wind. God has parted the sea for me by a wind. And God's Spirit has hovered over the waters by a wind. And what is the end result? Exodus 14:21. That strong east wind made bone dry land. We've seen that before in Genesis 1:9. It's the perfect environment for man. It's the foundation of his perfect habitation. So if you're an Israelite listening to this, you're flashing back to seeing the Red Sea parting and walking on bone dry land. God has preserved you and the perfect environment for you with water on the left and water on the right. God keeps his covenants to man and provides him with life, the perfect place, with perfect provision and attention to every detail. God keeps his promises perfectly. That's the main point we're looking for in the middle of this big chiasm. It's beautiful. God keeps his promises perfectly. And if you think about it, the truth to that is really overwhelming. So if you'll look at me, look with me. Look with me at the big picture from today. Number one, to be a righteous person, to be blameless, to walk by faith in an attitude of obedience requires hearing. Not just hearing, but true listening. Have you ever heard the joke that goes, "Blessed are those who are engaged in lively conversation with the helplessly mute, for they shall be called dentists." Do you ever feel like your conversation with God is like God is in the dentist chair and you're pouring out to him everything you want to say, everything you want done, everything you want to see happen here? What is conversation without the listening? Do you know how to listen? And more importantly, do you know how to listen to God? He's your Savior. He's your closest friend. He's your Creator. He's your covenant maker. He's your truth. How well have you cultivated your spiritual listening ear? How much are you like Noah? Adam brought all humanity into sin with him when he chose to listen to the voice of Satan and the voice of his wife instead of listening to Yahweh to worship and obey. Noah found favor in the eyes of Yahweh by being righteous, obedient, and blameless in his generation. He was righteous because he was obedient to do everything that God had commanded him. Through that righteousness, he became the second father of mankind, helping to save man and animals from being completely destroyed on the earth. So that leaves me with the question, what kind of man am I going to be? Do I listen to God? And what does it take to listen to God? If I'm going to be like Noah, a role model of obedience, righteousness, and faith, then how do I learn to listen to God? Big picture number two. What do you hear and do? Are you hearing in an attitude of obedience? There's our faith, righteousness, and obedience all rolled up together again. It's not enough to just hear. You have to do. Noah heard, "Build an ark, and I will save you and your family and all kinds of animals on the earth." I was listening to Howard Hendricks one day in a conference, and he said something that stuck with me, and it went like this. He says, always listen to what God says and obey it. Jesus says so often, I will never leave you. But when the crisis comes, you are the exception. If you never learn to hear, then someone else is always the problem according to you. If Jesus is in your boat, if Yahweh, God with you, is in your boat, there are two things for you to know. One, the boat will never sink. And two, the storm will never last. When Jesus allows storms in your life, there is a purpose. The question is, what is he doing? In Mark 11, when God allowed another storm for some other people in the boat with Jesus sleeping in the bottom of it, what did they heard all day long? They had heard, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. That was all well and good, but God knows we don't learn our faith in a classroom. You learn faith by doing it. That is our inheritance with Noah in the righteousness that he shared in. You will hear and you will have the faith to accomplish the task if you learn to listen as Noah did. Hear God in an attitude of obedience.